that number of places where EQIP has been used and where conservation programs have been involved. There are basically two problems. One is knowledge, the other is resources. And you wouldn't think if you had $5 billion, you'd have any resource issues, but let me show you there. First of all, well, again, since we're talking about growers who have never used federal conservation programs, and we're talking about new practices like IPM, there's a huge knowledge gap here. With no disrespect to the great people who work at NRCS, virtually none of them could tell you what biofix is, couldn't tell you what a phenological model is, couldn't help you put together a spray program, and even the CCAs who typically work, certified crop advisors, who work with NRCS are not qualified to do pest management programs. So NRCS has not typically had the kind of technical expertise to implement pest management programs for tree food, vegetables, for special crops in general. At the same time, growers know nothing about these programs. I went to see a grower who said he'd never used NRCS programs, didn't have a contract or anything, and I said, so what are you doing? He says, a big sweet potato grower in East Smith County. He said, well, let me show you this book. So he shows me this book, which is basically his conservation security program plan. He had gotten about $200,000 from the federal government. He didn't know it came from the federal government. He didn't know that it was a particular program. All he knew was that he's doing something smart on his farm, and somebody would come in and help him get into the program. He's the exception. Most of our growers don't know what the NRCS office is. They think it's the NCRS office or the ASCS office. They don't even know where it is. Don't know how to apply to the programs. Most of the information that goes out from NRCS, because they've never worked with specialty crop growers in a lot of states, doesn't even go out to specialty crop growers. And most of our growers, our extension agents that work with them, don't know much about the programs. So there's a huge gap, even though there's a huge opportunity here. Secondly, most of the people in extension and land grants don't know much about these programs. You're looking at the exception to the rule here in the people in this room. We had a big meeting in Wilmington, North Carolina with about 40 or 50 strawberry growers where we talked about a new practice that had been implemented for methylbromide alternatives in strawberry and vegetable production. About 40 growers there, all of them said, this would be great. We'd love to use this program. And so I said, where do you guys usually get your information about new programs? We get them from extension. Six extension agents in the back of the room, smart people, there's nothing wrong with them. I said, hey, they're an extension, that's a separate thing. But these are smart people in real life. They, I asked all of them if they knew anything about these programs. They knew nothing. So the usual mechanism by which growers learn about these programs isn't available in most cases. So there's a huge knowledge gap. It's not only a gap in basic knowledge, there's also a gap in working relationships, even though you've heard of some of the exceptions. On the resource side, NRCS gets roughly $5 billion for EQIP alone in the last farm bill. NRCS got not one single additional employee. So basically, they got a huge reservoir of gasoline and nobody drives the vehicle. There has been virtually no more money for outreach, for conservation planning, for additional program services, or for technical assistance. So somehow, NRCS is supposed to deliver $5 billion worth of programs with no additional resources. That's meant that NRCS has had to deal with the people they knew and take extra time to deal with growers that have never been in the door. And that's a huge problem. There are enormous transaction costs for the growers to get to know these programs and for NRCS to get to have working relationships with the growers, with the extension agents, and getting a little bit up to speed on the technical aspects of something like IPM. So that's just the way things are. That's an enormous problem. There's a real mismatch right now between the resources that are available for this program and actually ability to deliver the programs to people who have never been in the programs before. Having said that, there, as Mike has mentioned, as Ed mentioned, there are exceptions to the rule. And those exceptions to the rule have some very, very basic things in common. Where growers have succeeded in getting involved in conservation programs, in each case, the grower groups have decided to get very involved in making it possible. And in many cases, for example, in Michigan a few years ago, the head of the Asparagus Growers Association said, I'm going to encourage my growers to apply to this program, even though I know most of them are going to get turned down. Because we've got this little catch-22. We don't apply for the They're also identified for the programs. NFCS never meets these guys. Our growers never understand the programs, and there seems to be no demand on the grower side. So when the grower groups have gotten involved, it's been very helpful. It's also been helpful because it's, you know, with all due respect, you get a bunch of entomologists coming into the room and say, hey, we want to do some entomology. Can you have some more federal money? Big deal. With all due respect to entomologists, that's not what NFCS is out there for. NFCS is out there to deliver, NFCS is out there to deliver programs to growers so they can conserve natural resources. So growers are both a constituency and within a small p political constituency for these programs. Their support and their interest in this is absolutely essential. Secondly, you need to have the technical expertise for IPM available. Whether it's the land grant people, or it's people like Barry, Will, or other consultants involved, if you don't have the science already lined up, it's going to be really hard to push this program through. It's going to be hard to give NFCS good information. It's going to be hard to actually explain these programs to the growers. The third piece has been the support of the state office and important people in the state office. In California, we have a good working relationship with folks there. In North Carolina, Mike's talking about getting married and stuff like that. But I love those guys. They're great guys to work with. So the state office matters a lot because the program specifications really make a difference into how easily these programs are adaptable for growers. The other thing is it's absolutely essential, if you're going to make this work, to have at least one district conservationist, one person at the county level who's willing to work with these growers and put in the extra time. Well, you know this, if you don't have that, these programs don't happen. So there gotta be people out there who are willing to do some additional work. The other piece that's true in all of these are extremely labor-intensive efforts. You have to have somebody out there who's really gonna take the time to help growers go through the application process, whether it's the work that Barry did with a lot of his growers. You need somebody like Dave Bittner in Pennsylvania who's willing to talk to the growers when they have questions to help them work through the problems. When the district conservationist doesn't understand what in the world the grower's doing, there always has to be an awful lot of follow-up, especially at the beginning of a new program. Once these programs get up and running, it's fine. But there's an enormous investment of time and energy in making these programs work. If you don't have it, it doesn't happen. The good news about all of this is that the programs are really quite adaptable. The standards are written in such a way that you can do a lot of things. And just in the last year, we've done everything from work with small hog operators raising hogs out there in North Carolina, to establishing work with organic farmers, to establish grain production in eastern North Carolina, to working with peach growers in Georgia to implement mating disruption, and finally to adding to our state EQIP program practices to mitigate the impacts of methylbromide, incentives for methylbromide and for the use of very impermeable tarping. So the program has an enormously broad applicability in terms of the types of resource concerns it can address. But the truth of the matter is that all of these require those seven elements to succeed at the local level. Okay. Huge potential, adaptable programs, but what we still have is a series of relatively isolated incidents. This IPM is not available in every state. For example, this year for the first time, Virginia is making its first payments under the 595 standard in its history. Virginia is a big specialty crop state. So the question is, how do we take what we've learned in these individual situations and make it more broadly available? There's been a lot of talk about the Farm Bill. Quite frankly, the Farm Bill is not the place, and Jonathan may have a different perspective on this, Farm Bill is not the place to write language about specific practices like IPM. Farm Bill is the place to talk about broad resource concerns and what are the mechanisms necessary so that we can address those resource concerns. And so I think in terms of what the Farm Bill can do, and actually what at least both the House and Senate versions of the Farm Bill currently have, and the House has a version of the Farm Bill, and the Senate has some ideas about a version of the Farm Bill. At least the Ag Committee does, anyways. There's several things that can be done over the next year that are at least in the hopper now as far as legislative language. One is, and Michael alluded to this, is to establish a national part, some national attention at the headquarters level to look and see not where the RPM is being implemented, but what are the needs of specialty crop growers and other growers who've never been involved in conservation programs can be addressed effectively by not only our programs, but also the mechanisms that we have in place. That provides both an equity of treatment and equity of opportunity for grower groups of a whole range of crops, but it also opens up an enormous constituency of people who can increase resource conservation because they're management-intensive crops. If you were going to start conserving resources in the United States, you would probably look for those people who are already the best managers and the most comprehensive managers of crops if you wanted to get the quickest return for your dollar. And so there needs to be attention at the headquarters level to address the needs of specialty crop growers, which in turn will address IPM issues. Secondly, we need to address alternative ways of delivering these programs to farmers. With all due respect to NRCS, Congress and the Office of Management and Budget are not likely to give you any new information.